conference that we were able to have. Several of the visitors said that it was the best conference they've been in. A lot of that has to do with the spirit you come. But it was a good conference. Brother Stalnaker is beside himself. He had quite a time. So we're thankful. Today we'd like to read a very familiar verse. Verse 21. For me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. These, of course, are the words of Paul while he was in a Roman prison, awaiting trial before Caesar. He's been arrested as an insurrectionist against the Roman Empire. He is faced with a very real possibility of death. In that prison, he does not know what the outcome will be, whether it will be life or death. Humanly speaking, his life hangs in the balance. Did not know for sure if he would be released from prison or if he would die. It would be one or the other. He would either be released or he would be put to death. But his concern was not that he lived or that he died, but that Christ would be magnified in him. That Christ would be seen in his life or in his death in a mighty way. Notice verse 20. According to my earnest expectation, my hope, that in nothing I shall be ashamed, but with all boldness as always, so now also Christ shall be magnified in my body, whether it be by life or by death. And then he moves into verse 21, for me to live is Christ, and to die is gain, which is somewhat of a summation. What he's saying is, if I live, my life will continue to be Christ. And if I die, I win. He's telling these Philippians, if I continue to live, I intend for my life to be all about Christ. And if I die, that is to my profit, my benefit, and the increase will be mine. What he's saying is because of Christ, it's good for me either way. I can't lose. Can't lose if I continue to live, and I can't lose if I die. He is saying, I have a blessed life, and I have a blessed end as well. For me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. These are not the words of a man who is discouraged or defeated by his circumstances. For me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. These are not the words of a man trapped in the gloom and the dreariness of prison. They're not the words of a man who is indifferent. For me to live is Christ, to die is gain. It is a statement. It is a statement of resolve. It is a statement of faith. It is a statement of hope and victory. A statement that encompasses all of life and even death. In this message, we want to take the thought from the first part of the verse, for me to live is Christ. It is a statement of Paul with regards to living his life. We all have a life and we must live that life. No one can live it for us. And Paul says, for me, to live is Christ. He is saying, to me, life is altogether, everywhere, always Christ. Regardless of what anyone else does, for me to live is Christ. It is also a statement that both defines and explains the life of Paul. Paul had a remarkable life, and this statement defines and explains that life. For me to live is Christ. There is no life more stimulating, more exhilarating, and more thrilling than a life lived for Christ. There is no life more profitable. There is no life more advantageous. There is no life more beneficial. So we want to speak this morning on a life of gain. A life of gain. You cannot lose living. For me to live is Christ. It is a life of gain. First of all, that statement is indicative of a change that had taken place. For me to live is Christ. That was not always so for Paul. There was a time that he lived for his own dead religion. There was a time that he lived for his own reputation, for his own cause. There was a time when he lived against Christ. There was a time when he lived without Christ. Then there came that day on the Damascus Road, and we read about in Acts chapter 9. And there he is. His life is filled with enmity, hatred. He's in a rage, filled with contempt and rebellion toward Christ. He is an avowed enemy of Christ, living in absolute ignorance and defiance of Christ. And he's heading down the Damascus Road and he has letters in his hand. And he's en route to arrest God's people in Damascus and bring them back to Jerusalem to stand trial and to face possible death. His whole intent is to snuff out the name of Christ. He said of himself in 1 Timothy, Chapter 1 and verse 13, that he was a blasphemer, a persecutor, an injurious. We read in Acts chapter 9 and verse 3, as he journeyed, he came near Damascus. He had traveled approximately 160 miles on his mission of hatred and persecution. But as he came near to Damascus, there was a turning point. Something would happen that would make a lasting difference in his life. We read in Acts chapter 9 and verse 3, suddenly, that is, without any warning whatsoever, there shined round about him. It is everywhere he turned, there shined round about him a light from heaven. He testified in Acts 26 and verse 13 that it was a light from heaven above the brightness of the noonday sun. This was not something he could escape. And he says, it shined round about me. What was that light? It was Christ, who is the light of the world. Christ has intervened in his life, and there was nowhere to go because the light was round about him. No matter what direction he would have turned in, there he was, Jesus Christ. He could not escape. We are told that in Acts chapter 9 that Saul, seeing and no doubt feeling the power and the intensity of Christ's presence, he fell to the ground. He fell to the ground. And while on the ground, he heard the voice of Christ confronting him. Confronting him about his sin. He said, Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? That caused Saul to ask, who art thou, Lord? He knew it was the Lord. Who art thou, Lord? The light of Christ's presence engulfing Saul so that he could not escape. He heard these words, I am Jesus, whom thou persecutest. I am Jesus. I am Jesus. The one that you hate. The one that you are so zealous against. I am Jesus whom thou persecutest. I am God's provision. I am God's sacrifice for your sins. I am Jesus. I am the one and only Savior of guilty sinners like yourself. I am Jesus, God's remedy and solution for Saul's need. I am the one that you so desperately and urgently need. Now Saul would have continued on his journey had not Christ stepped in and put a stop to it. You never know when Christ is going to show up and intervene in a lost sinner's life. But at that moment, his entire life was dramatically and radically altered. There he was, estranged from God, living under the dominion of Satan and under the power of darkness. He is deceived, he is ignorant, he is blind. His heart is hard, he's striving against God. He's a rejecter of Jesus Christ. He's unrighteous, he's ungodly. He's bankrupt. He's lost. He's trapped under the weight of sin. And Jesus came where he was. And that day changed his hellbound journey. Saul was not merely on his way to Damascus. Saul was on his way to hell in Christ. Intervened And that day, he was rescued from the guilt. He was rescued from the alienation and the condemnation and the enmity and the devastation and the wretchedness of sin. And he was pardoned. And he was cleansed. He was reconciled to God. He was brought near to God. He was brought into fellowship with God. God received him and accepted him. And he was brought into the riches of Jesus Christ. And there was a joy and a peace that filled the entire being of Saul. What happened that day was real. When the Lord saves a sinner, it's real. It's something that you cannot deny. It was something that was very definite. It had a lasting effect and impact upon his heart, upon his mind, upon his spirit, upon the outward life of Paul. What happened that day when the Damascus Road was not something that bypassed the heart and mind and the emotions. And when the Lord saved our soul, it's not something that bypassed our heart, our mind, and our emotions. It was not something that bypassed his life. It was not just some flash in the pan experience. But it was a person-changing, life-changing event that he never got over. He never got away from what transpired that day in the Damascus Road. And I believe Paul walked that Damascus Road many other times after this. And I imagine that was a special spot, a special place in the road. You know, brings to my mind Brother Eugene Clark, when we pastored at Zor, every time there was a fellowship meeting that was hosted by Zor, Brother Clark would come and he would stand by me and he'd say, "Brother Dan, right there, third pew from the back on the right-hand side as you walk in, right there, that's where the Lord met me." He never forgot it. It's a special place. Paul never got away. What happened that day? And what happened on that Damascus Road that day was that Jesus came to him and caused his heart to overflow. As you read through the epistles, with joy and thanksgiving and prayer. And now we hear him say, "For me to live is Christ." It's amazing today that there are many who profess that they had this very same experience, but they could not say in their wildest imagination, "For me to live is Christ." That ought to always be the effect. I believe it is the immediate effect of salvation. "For me to live is Christ." So we see, secondly, this is a statement that's indicative of a life forever impacted. We've all had many events happen in our lives that did not impact our entire life. Many things we have forgotten about. But this is not something you can forget. this is something that impacts your life. If it doesn't, you need to really honestly examine whether or not it's ever really happened. In that statement, for me to live is Christ, Paul speaks of two entities, himself and Christ. Me and Christ. Me and God's dear Son, who is the image of God, who's the creator of all things, the fullness of God, the Redeemer, the Reconciler, the hope of glory, the treasure of wisdom and knowledge, the spoiler of principalities and powers, the Savior and friend of sinners. So he speaks of these two entities, himself and Christ. And he speaks of living life. For me to live is Christ. And that's true of every one of us here today, whether saved or unsaved. There is ourself. There is Christ, and there is life. Self, Christ, and life. And Paul says, for me to live is Christ. That reveals that he had a proper perspective concerning himself. He had a proper perspective concerning Christ. And he had a proper perspective concerning life. For me to live is Christ. And look at the life of Paul. From that Damascus Road experience on, look at his life. Did he live a life of frustration? Did he live a life of exasperation? Did he live a life of disappointment and dissatisfaction? No. For me to live is Christ. That doesn't lead to disappointment and dissatisfaction. These are not the words of a man whose life was mundane. His life was not chaotic. His life was not an entangled mess. No, to live for Christ, you'll live above the chaotic. And you'll live above the entangled mess that so many are in. These are the words of a man who lived a life of courage, who lived a life of strength, who lived a life of assurance and perseverance. These are the words of a man who lived the abundant and heavenly life. For me to live is Christ. These are the words of a man who lived a life of great usefulness. I just want to be useful, someone says. Then live for the Lord. Don't live for yourself. Live for the Lord. That Christ would be your life. That is a useful. That is a meaningful life. The life of a child of God should never be a waste. It ought to be the most meaningful life. A productive life. A life that manifested and glorified the Lord. In the midst of extremely adverse and trying circumstances, his was a life that manifested Christ. And that's what he's praying for in verse 20. You think about it. For me to live is Christ. These are the words of a man whose life was and still is. Still is. Thousands of years later. Still is. A life of widespread encouragement. How many times you read an epistle of Paul and you're encouraged? Thousands of years later, because this man, for me to live, is Christ. His life is still a blessing today. He's been gone for thousands of years. His life is still a blessing today. Still an incentive to God's people. You see, our life, the influence of our life is not just limited to the time we have here. Hopefully, the influence is for good beyond. For me to live is Christ. Those words are like an open window into the heart and mind of Paul concerning the way, concerning the manner in which he lived. For me to live is Christ. Now God has given each one of us a life to live. And you have no choice. You have to live that life. You have to live life. And we hear Paul say, for me. For me. To live as Christ. He is describing his life since that glorious day on the Damascus Road. Ever since that day. For me. Life is different, he says. Life, of course, consists of days, weeks, months, and years. And that statement, for me to live as Christ, is inclusive of all the days, all the weeks, all the months, and all the years. Life consists of responsibilities. Privileges and opportunities. And that statement, for me to live as Christ, includes the responsibilities of life. You do not separate responsibilities from Christ or opportunities. Life consists of thoughts. How many thoughts go through our mind in a lifetime? How many decisions we make. How many choices we make. Life consists of motives and life consists of aims and purposes and goals. And determinations. Desires and pursuits. And I believe all of those are included in that statement. For me to live is Christ. That is, when it comes time to make a decision or a choice, for me, it's Christ. When it comes time to pursue, for me, it's Christ, Paul says. For me to live is Christ. Life consists of friends. It also consists of enemies. Life consists of family. Family consists of friends and enemies many times. Life consists of relationships. And all of those are included in that statement. For me, to live is Christ. When it comes to friends, for me, Christ. When it comes to dealing with our enemies, for me, Christ. When it comes to dealing with family or any other relationship, for me, Christ. Life consists of careers and places. And those are included in this statement, for me to live is Christ. When it comes time to choose a career, for me, Christ. When it comes time to choose a place to live, for me, Christ. Life consists of a variety of conditions, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. Consists of a variety of circumstances. And all of these are included in that statement. For me to live is Christ. And the basis of it all is the miracle of salvation. That's the basis of it all. If you do not have this miracle of salvation, a Damascus Road experience, you will never live this life. This is the basis. This is the motivation. Again, we hear this one who at one time was estranged from God, was under the dominion of Satan and under the power of darkness, bankrupt and lost, trapped. And now we hear him say, for me to live is Christ. He's been rescued. He's been rescued from the alienation, from the guilt. He's been rescued from the condemnation. He's been taken out of the enmity and the pollution. He's been taken out of the bankruptcy and out of the darkness. And he's been pardoned. And he's been cleansed. And he's been reconciled to God. And he's been made near to God and brought into fellowship with God. And he's now accepted by God and brought into the riches of Christ. He has joy, he has peace. Is it any wonder for me to live is Christ? He is saying, for me, life is Christ. My whole life is Christ. The sum and the substance of my life is Christ. Christ is the essence of my being. Christ. Nothing in life outside of Christ is what he's saying. For me to live is Christ. He is describing his life. He is describing the life that he longs to live. He is describing the life that we ought to long to live. He is describing a life that is lived above and beyond the emptiness and the form and the shadow of mere religion. For me to live is Christ. He is describing a life that goes beyond mere appearance. A life that goes much deeper than the mere surface. He's describing a life that goes beyond theory. For me to live is Christ. This is a life that goes beyond the spiritual cliches and the religious platitudes and the doctrinal facts. For me to live is Christ. He's describing a life that is so much more than conversion to a system of belief. I know what I believe, and I can defend what I believe. But my life must be more than a conversion to a system of belief. For me to live is Christ. He is saying, for me, life is all about a person. It's not all about a grandchild or a son or a daughter. It is about a person, but that person is Christ. Life is all about Christ. There is no better life. He said the same thing basically in Colossians 3 in verse 4 when he said, Christ is our life. Christ is our life. He is saying my life is inseparably linked to Christ. He is saying I am obsessed with Christ. Why? Because he never got away from what happened on the Damascus Road. He is saying my impulse, the passion of my life is Christ. He's describing a life that corresponds to Christ. He is describing a life that is parallel to Christ. He is describing a life that is identified with Christ. For me, to live is Christ. He is saying Christ is the purpose of my life. He's my motive. He's my reason. He's the focal point. He's the priority of my life. He is saying Christ is for whom I live. For me to live is Christ. And that was true even in prison. Circumstances did not change his living. He is saying, in life, Christ is the one upon whom I lean. He is the one upon whom I depend. He is the one that I cleave to. He is saying, I live. No matter what the circumstance, I live and I have in view Jesus Christ. He is the pursuit of my life. I pursue Christ in life. And he described that in Philippians chapter 3. He was pursuing with great desire and great longing Christ. He always wanted a closer association, more intimate contact, deeper fellowship, and a deeper relationship with Christ. Why? Why wasn't just religion good enough? Why wasn't just the religious platitudes good enough? Because of what happened that day on the Damascus Road. He never got away from it. So religious platitudes would not do. Mere surface religion would not do. Just going to church every now and then would not do. He said, for me to live is Christ. Because salvation was real. And you and I that have had a Damascus Road experience, how could we live any other way than for me to live is Christ. He is saying, here I am. I'm in prison. I'm in an antichrist world. A world marked by opposition to Jesus Christ. A world that is opposite of Christ. A world that is so unlike Jesus Christ. A world that is in ignorance to Jesus Christ. A world that rejects Jesus Christ. But regardless of all of that, for me to live is Christ. You're saying I'm not going in the direction of the world. I'm not even going in the direction of the religious crowd or the religious movement of the day. For me to live is Christ. In an antichrist world, and we live in an antichrist world more so than Paul did. That is a radical statement. That is a radical life for me to live is Christ. It is saying, I am not of this world. I am different. My Damascus Road experience took me out of this world. And I am different. And he is saying, it is now my intent that my life will not be shaped by the world, but for me to live is Christ. So we have to ask ourselves, to what extent do those words mark our lives? For me to live is Christ. We that are saved, we have been set free from the guilt and the condemnation of sin. Why? Christ. Because of Christ. We have been cleansed from the filth and the defilement of sin. We have been rescued from the darkness and from the ignorance of sin, from the sickness and the enslaving power of sin. We've been brought out of the alienation and the estrangement from God. We've been brought out from a life of restlessness and a lifestyle of sin. And who did all that? Christ. Christ. My family didn't do that for me. My friends didn't do that for me. The church didn't do that for me. Some religious movement did not do that for me. Jesus Christ came where I was. How can it be any different for me to live? Is Christ. Anyone who's been truly saved, you should never have to talk into serving God. If being saved doesn't do it, don't waste your breath. You and I are saved. It's all because of Christ that we've passed from death unto life unto death. Passed from death unto life. All because of Christ. We've been reconciled, justified, forgiven, accepted by God, made a child of God, and a joint heir with Jesus Christ, forever changed, and given a glorious future that we can't even imagine. All because of Christ. Can we say today, for me to live is Christ. For me me. Regardless of what anyone else does or says or thinks. For me, life is Christ. That needs to be our life. For me to live is, and just stop right there. For me to live is, something has to follow. What is it? What is it that follows? Oh, it can be many things. For me, but if it's anything other than for me to live as Christ, if it's anything other than that, for a child of God, you're wasting your life. You're trampling on the grace of God that saved your soul. For me to live is. We are to love our families, our children, our grandchildren, our spouses. But that's not my life. That's not to be our life. For me to live is. And if you can defend, for me to live is, and it's anything other than Christ, and you have the audacity to defend that, you really, truly, and I don't say this to be mean, you truly need to examine whether you've ever been saved. Whether you've ever had that Damascus Road experience. For me to live as Christ, He is saying, for me, my whole life is Christ. Now, that's not true. None of us can honestly say that everything in our life is about Christ. But that ought to be our desire. That ought to be our longing. For me, my whole life is Christ. He saved my soul. Can I not, with this short life that He has, by His grace and mercy, given, can I not make it about Him? He saved my soul. Delivered me from sin. For all eternity. Forever with Him. Why would I even desire to live for anything or anybody else? For me to live is Christ. I pray that that would be the sentiment of each and every one of us that know the Lord. Go back to that Damascus Road. Go back there often. Just keep going back there. Keep going back there. Keep going back there. Well, I don't believe in living in the past. That past is good. There's nothing wrong with going back there and visiting and just meditating upon that day. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse song.